Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Cenovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at Cenovus.com.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hello, 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 and welcome to another edition of the Niner Noise Podcast, part of the Fansided Podcast Network. My name is Robert Morrison, a contributor at NinerNoise.com, and here with me, as we are really into the throes of the offseason now, is fellow contributor Akshaz Dipadula. Akshaz, how are things, man?
Things are good, Robert. You know, it's the NFL really never has a down period, but I feel like when your team was in the playoffs as close as the 49ers were, it feels like the combine is a little bit of a down period, but you know, we're all in, we're getting ready to go because the off season started and you know, the NFL always something happening. So
yeah,
busy time for sure.
Yeah. The extended season with the Super Bowl trip definitely makes this feel like, oh wait, hold on a second, I thought we were gonna stop and do something else for a minute, but no. The combine happened last week. The new league year starts like what, 9 days from now. I think March 13th as we're recording this on March 4th, so we're less than 10 days from the new league year starting, which means free agency will kind of get rolling in that period as well. And then we'll have to deal with, and then there will be the small calm before the draft storm, and then of course a little bit of a mini downtime. But as you noted, the NFL has set itself up for basically never having anybody stop talking about it. Like it's by design, right? It's like this is the way they want it to operate. They want constant conversation. I mean, they didn't create their own, you know, NFL network to just have nothing to talk about for extended periods of the year. This is what they want, and so this is what they're getting from us and from others for sure.
Yeah, I mean, you know, the cycle's always happening, but the thing is, there is always something to talk about.
True, right?
Especially, you know, 31 teams go home unhappy and thinking that they got to improve something or the other. And the Niners are one of them. So there's always the combine is the off season is a time where every team except like really, 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 really sad fans think that they got a chance. Like, that's the thing. Even the most downtrodden franchises are given hope before the games start. And we're in that place. Everyone's 0-0. So it's a lot of fun right now.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I liked it better when, you know, when things were looking up, but nonetheless, here we are. We're into it. So we got a couple of things to get into at this point. The first is that apparently after much speculation, the 49ers have reportedly brought in their new defensive coordinator. I think they ended up interviewing 5 guys for the position, if I'm not mistaken. 2 internal guys and 3 external candidates, and ended up making, I think, a very non-surprising move in the end, but also added a little twist to the end of it to add a little intrigue and surprise to that. So they ended up hiring Nick Sorensen, who was one of the internal candidates, along with Randy Bullock, off the current staff. Sorensen has been like officially he was the defensive passing game coordinator, has been his title the last, yeah, defensive passing game specialist, with specific focus on nickelbacks, which is particularly interesting given the sort of absolute dearth of nickelbacks that the 49ers had this past season. He's got an interesting background in the NFL, and we'll talk about that in a little bit. But he's reportedly, as of a couple of days ago, is the guy that Kyle Shanahan has decided to replace with Steve Wilks. I don't know. It's interesting. We'll get into the details of that. But that wasn't the surprising part. The surprising part is that Brandon Staley, who is also another candidate for the position and interviewed with Shanahan during this time, was also hired. Reportedly, again, we haven't seen anything official from the team as of now. Monday night, again, on March the 4th. We haven't seen anything from the team that says these guys are definitely being hired. The scuttlebutt is that actually Staley is going to actually really more be filling the Anthony Lynn role in that he'll be the assistant head coach. I think there's probably a little something to the fact that Nick Sorensen will be a first-time defensive coordinator. And while Brandon Staley has not spent a lot of time as a play caller in the defense on the defensive coordinator side of the ball, he does have head coaching experience. So there's probably something to that as well. So interesting that this is the direction that they've gone with it. I don't know, Akshaz, what thoughts did you have about this hire? And we can talk a little bit about Sorensen and Staley a little bit too.
I mean, I'm interested in large part by who it is the 49ers tried to hire but didn't. You know, the scuttlebutt, as I love that word. I'm going to use that now.
You're welcome.
Is that the 49ers, Kyle Shanahan made a call to Bill Belichick, and Belichick obviously refused. He's probably doing TV. They then tried to hire Spagnuolo from Kansas City. So Kansas City gave Spags a hefty new contract. And then I think there were a lot of reports that they were trying to hire Jeff Ulbrich from the Jets. But, you know, the Jets have no obligation to give Ulbrich a lateral move, even though obviously there's a difference, kind of like not in name, but in like power, when you're the defensive coordinator under an offensive head coach and a defensive coordinator under a defensive head coach, like Ulbrich is with Saleh right now.
Yeah.
And then from there, interviewed Staley, then interviewed two external minority candidates, which is required under the Rooney rule, I believe, and then went with this kind of dual process. My intuition is that Shanahan really wasn't as committed to the system if he could get someone he thought justified leaving the system, right, which is what, you know, Belichick and Spagnuolo are, right? Spagnuolo doesn't run like the Seattle 4-3, but he's really good, and Belichick is probably the greatest defensive mind in NFL history. He was willing to change for those guys. When those guys weren't there, I think it became a more of a let's just get our like system in place. Ulbrich would have, I think, called a very similar defense to what the 49ers have had. And I think Staley kind of fills the Anthony Lynn role for sure, but is really that outside influence that perhaps the Niners were hoping to get a different perspective on some of their defense. Maybe they thought there's needed to be a better mix between what was going on with D'Amico Ryans and what was going on with Steve Wilks, insofar as like have the kind of freshness that Ryans brought and that Wilks would bring, but also keep kind of the fundamental tenets of the defense in this hire. I'm interested that they still hire Brandon Staley.
Yeah.
That just seems like it, whether you want it to or not, that feels like it could really undermine the Sorensen, insofar as that's a hard place to be, right? One of the guys who interviewed for your job is basically hired, is going to be walking around the building with you, giving his thoughts. He's an assistant head coach, right? Like, there's lots of ways it can go well. There's lots of ways it can go bad. But, you know, the 49ers are clearly banking on getting to some standard of defense that they thought they lost last year. I think statistically everything looks fine from last year. For the most part, I thought the defense played very well. But it seems like the amount of influence or, like, credit they gave Wilks for that turnaround is actually pretty minimal. compared to some of the assistant coaches. And the things that they thought Wilkes struggled on, they thought were defensive coordinator things. I thought the most interesting point was just the idea that Wilkes was on a different page than the linebackers from the 49ers. And I think that's huge. I think that's where you, like, you win or lose this defense is from the linebacking position. Because, I mean, we spent all of last year talking about how good Fred Warner is. He's like one of five, I'd say, players in the NFL right now on defense that force you to change the way you play offense and change the way you can call a game. He's that good at such a unique spot that I think Wilkes kind of leaned too much into the blitz Warner a lot, use him as like a quote unquote normal middle linebacker when he's not a normal middle linebacker. He's like the best cover backer in the league. So I'm guessing that's where they're trying to get the change, is to get the linebackers back to playing like the linebackers, and everything falls from there. But I don't know. It's an expected hire, but I wouldn't call it particularly flashy, and I think it's a lot of jury is out until we see how Sorensen actually approaches this defense.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's in a way it's kind of a, I think Shanahan realizes that the mistake that he probably made with Steve Wilkes was hiring from the outside, but then also hiring from the outside and then kind of forcing the issue with the, like, you got to maintain what we've already been doing, because everybody's really comfortable with it. Sure, you can put your little spin on it, but mostly we want you to do the things we've already been doing. And like you said, if Belichick had been like, yeah, sure, I'll come there, then you let him do whatever he wants. Or if Spagnuolo had been like, sure, I'm getting tired of Kansas City, it's nicer out in Santa Clara, I'll come out there and run your defense and see if I can stop Patrick Mahomes. Then you would let him do whatever he wants. But barring that, you kind of got to go with the flow and just kind of find somebody who understands what this team has been doing, who has the background in the system that you're running. Sorensen was actually in Seattle during the heyday of the Seahawks defense. So he's been around that. Interestingly enough, he has some background as a special teams coordinator. He was a special teams coordinator in Jacksonville for 1 year after he left Seattle. But he's been with the 49ers since 2022. He was a defensive assistant and then spent last season as a defensive pass game coordinator, as I mentioned, and now is reportedly the defensive coordinator for the 49ers. It's interesting that once again they're putting their hopes, their defensive hopes, on a guy who has no play calling experience, at least in terms of running a defense. As I said, he called some plays, I'm assuming, as a defensive or as a special teams coordinator. I'm not really sure what the sort of in-game operations of the special teams coordinator are. I'm assuming it varies from team to team. But to be honest, they've done it. This will be the third time that they've entrusted that position to a guy who has absolutely no experience calling defense, and it went pretty well the first two times. And so you got to hope that Shanahan trusts that he's going to be there and knows and will figure out what he needs to do. Will there be growing pains? Probably. Is that a little bit worrying on a team that is going to really, as we've already talked about, is going to really need to take advantage of 2024 and have their best, put their best foot forward? Yeah, I think part of it, there's a little concern there, but you also got to think that it's going to come down to just like day-to-day operations. I think everything else will stay the same. The Staley thing is interesting. Yes, it gets him an opportunity to kind of rehab his image coming out of what was not a great time in Los Angeles with the Chargers. But yeah, I think by and large, this is just another voice. So it is kind of hedging the bet a little bit. It's like, okay, we have this guy, we want to trust him to do the job, but also here's another voice that's going to be running, who has a background in some other system. Because that was the other time when Shanahan was was willing to kind of like change his defensive scheme was when they initially came to San Francisco, and he decided that and when he wasn't allowed to hire Vic Fangio because he was in Chicago at the time, that's when he kind of made the decision to go with the system that they have been running since then. And that's where Staley comes out of, is the he's a Fangio tree guy. So it'll be really interesting to see how the pairing works. You know, what kind of impact will Staley have on the defense? Or is he just kind of there to kind of help Shanahan in the day-to-day operations? Do we even want that? I don't really know, but it'll be really interesting to see. But yeah, Sorensen is an interesting, we're all going to be figuring him out as the season goes on. It'll be really interesting to see what things he has to say about what his thoughts are and what his plans are for this season. So I have absolutely no strong thoughts about it. It's like, okay, I'm not surprised that they went internal, but I'm also like, okay, we'll just have to see, right? That's mm-hmm. all we can say.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, you know, like you said, it's a weird one right now. I think that's the best way to put it, is they're kind of like, they're hoping for a lot from Sorensen. And I mean, this is why Wilkes took the job, right? This is one of those jobs that you're going to be in those big moments and they're going to expect a lot from you. And if you get it done, that's a head coaching job, like absolutely right. locked yeah. in place. It's that simple. So, you know, we'll see. Sorensen has a lot going for him.
Yeah. I think you're absolutely right. I mean, that's why you try to get yourself in those situations, because ultimately, I would think most of the time for a lot of these guys, not for all coaches. I don't think all coaches in the NFL have aspirations to run a team someday, like from a head coaching position. Like I think if you ask Chris Kocurek, like that guy doesn't even want to be the defensive coordinator of the 49ers, let alone be a head coach. But I think a lot of them want the opportunity to get to be able to do that someday. And we'll see if this works out for Sorensen. So we will await the official word, which I'm kind of surprised is taking so long to come through, but nonetheless. All right. So we mentioned the scouting combine happened, I guess, sort of last week as we're looking at this. Obviously, lots of things happening, you know, coaches and GMs and all the like, heading to the meetings, talking to the media, all that sort of thing. Kyle Shanahan, as he is wont to do, I don't think he's ever attended the scouting combine as 49ers head coach, just because he thinks that's not really like the best use of his time, which I think is probably correct. Like he's able to do as much. He can see most everything's all. I mean, he can see all the drills and everything that he needs to see, and he can just kind of get the numbers and all that kind of stuff. And he's just trusting the scouting department to do the work. So he's still in Santa Clara, or he was still in Santa Clara during the whole thing. But John Lynch was there, and obviously some other representatives from the team kind of running things. The interesting thing that I kind of want to talk about two things, and we can kind of see how this works together, is I was just kind of looking at a list from 49ers Web Zone, which is another group. They put together, they've been kind of tracking like the visitations that the 49ers have had with players, going all the way back from like you know, people that they've met with in various formats, from like the Senior Bowl and various bowl games and all that kind of stuff. But they did make a list of all the players that the 49ers met with. They have up to 45 formal meetings with prospects. They can also just kind of like, you know, walk up to players and be like, hey, like, how's it going? And have a chat with them, I guess, informally. The formal meetings would be more like sit downs and asking them specific questions and running through things. But it is interesting, as you're looking through the list, I'm not going to read this entire list because it's quite a long list, but just generally, just kind of glancing through the list, it is very, as you might imagine, offensive line heavy. It is very wide receiver heavy, with a couple of interesting names in there. It is very cornerback heavy, and then there's some edge rushers in there, mixed in a couple of defensive backs, especially kind of like notable guys that might be kind of hanging out there at the end of the first round kind of guys. They also talked to both Luke McCaffrey and Brendan Rice and Frank Gore Jr. So they knew the assignment, and they at least met with the three of them. I have no idea if they would actually draft any of the three of them, but they met with them nonetheless. So I think it's interesting just kind of what that tells us. They did meet with a running back or two, but we'll forgive it. We'll forgive that in this particular case. But it is, again, very heavy on offensive line, cornerback, not as defensive line heavy, a few names here and there. But I think if you looked through it, it would be offensive line, cornerback, wide receiver, and then some, you know, edge rushers would be like your main, the positions that stand out to me. So Akshay, does this surprise you in any way, shape, or form? Is like the positions the Niners seem to be focusing on, and does this tell us anything about what their draft might look like?
I'm not particularly surprised, other than I'm almost excited that they're not meeting up with every single edge rusher, because I think at this point you've drafted like two or three edge rushers. Clearly, it's time to look somewhere else and get a couple of guys in free agency, get that kind of like that system going. I'm really interested in the corner offensive tackle situation, because I, you know, with the 49ers, you can never be too certain of everything. This is a team that spent a third round pick on a kicker, fourth round pick on a punter. So, you know, I do not claim to know how they approach the draft, but I think if you'd have to handicap the positions the 49ers would select with their first pick, it's either offensive tackle or cornerback, with offensive tackle slightly ahead, only because it seems pretty clear that they don't trust Spencer Burford at right guard, which means that there's a whole lot of sorting out that has to be done, whether that means McKivitt slides down or you draft a tackle that can play guard, let him play right guard, then move him over when Trent retires. Or you get a guy to replace McKivitz altogether. Like, that's where I think things are starting to come into focus, is that's the point where you really have to make something work, because, you know, in the Super Bowl, that was the spot that when they had a chance to score a touchdown, that was the place where the pressure came. And beyond that, I think, like, Trent Williams is somehow the best offensive tackle at his age, but I think the writing's on the wall for him and for the 49ers that within the next couple of years, he's going to be hanging it up. I think this last year would have been his last one if not for the chance to break the all-time Pro Bowl record for left tackles, which I think he's hunting for. So offensive tackle fills two needs with one. But I think if you get one of those Alabama corners to fall to 31, neither Terron Arnold or Khalid McKinstry, the 49ers have to go there. And I like the fact that they're really committed to sorting out this nickel corner, kind of like three corner situation, because this is the future of the NFL, right? That's basically your base defense. And having a guy that you don't trust as much as they didn't trust Ambry Thomas out there, that's a concern.
Yeah. I mean, I think the nice thing is they're in a position. The roster is still in a really good place, and we'll obviously know more about how good the roster is, or a little better idea of where the roster will be heading into the draft once free agency is over. That is kind of one of the benefits of doing it in that particular order, is that you take care of positions that you really want to spend the money on, and then from there you're like, okay, now we have to fill other holes in the draft. But because their roster is in a good place for the most part, they don't have to be like, okay, we're locked in on this guy at 31. Like, if it's got to be this guy, or maybe even worse, it's got to be this position, right? I think locking in on a guy is fine, especially in the first round. It's not like my favorite thing, but it's an okay strategy. Like, if you know we're going to go after a guy and you feel really comfortable with him, And if he's there, then you're good. The problem with doing that is if he's not, then you're freaking out. I think I like the strategy even less of like, we're going to draft an offensive tackle here and it doesn't matter who it is. I'm not sure that it would be quite that sort of cut and dry kind of thing, but I think you can get yourself into a bad position if you're just like, we're just going to take an offensive tackle at 31. It doesn't matter. You know, we have a list of five guys and or whatever. I think they're in a position that they can go, okay, here's our order of players, regardless of position. And the first guy is an offensive tackle. Next guy's, you know, a cornerback. Then we have a however the positions line out. We have a wide receiver who we think that we would draft if he was still there. And it's like, whichever one of those guys is there, that's the one you take at 31, because you're generally in a good position to be able to fill those spots elsewhere if you need to. So we'll see how that plays, but I think they're in a position to be able to take the best player available with a slight caveat, where it's not like if the best player available is a safety, maybe they don't take that guy, right? But if it's like best player available who happens to fit one of their needs, then I think that might be a useful strategy. And I think that there is an indication that that seems to be the way it's going for sure.
Which, you know, I totally agree. That's the way you should approach the draft. That's how the best teams do it, right? Like the Ravens, who are phenomenal at drafting, seem to consistently get like best results. They'll take players and you'll look at it like, why did they don't need a player like that? But value is value, right? And I think Kyle Shanahan has mentioned that he likes the idea of the draft being before free agency, not because it's like a way in which you can like take best player available and then go from there. And I think that like logic is really interesting to me, because that's basically thinking about like that should be the way they approach the draft. And I really hope they do. I think you're absolutely right. They're talented enough as a team to not have to worry about, oh my God, we need a so-and-so here. I think back to 2018, where they needed an offensive tackle really bad, and they took Mike McGlinchey. But, you know, jury's out on whether or not taking a Derwin James or Minkah Fitzpatrick in that position would have been much better. So hopefully they go best player available. But, you know, again, I don't know. I'm a little terrified when they draft early rounds.
Yeah, it is. It is a little concerning for sure. But, you know. We'll see what happens with that. You mentioned Kool-Aid McKinstry from Alabama, the cornerback. He was on their visit list, so that's good to see. I think there's some interesting opportunities there. I know that there's a couple offensive tackles that stood out. It's like those might be the guy as far as opportunities. I think Amarius Mims from Georgia is another name that has come up as a possibility of somebody who could be there. But and then when we get to the sixth and seventh round, we just take Brendan Rice and Luke McCaffrey and Frank Gore Jr. and all as well, right? So how that works.
You know, I would actually love to see one of the two wide receivers on this team. That Frank Gore Jr., yes, bring him down, obviously. But, you know, for like not like drafting a running back for the 22nd time in the 7 year, 8 year, 10 year that the 49ers have.
As long as they don't take him in the third round. Like you just don't just don't take him in the third round and we'll be okay, I think.
But yeah, I mean, it'll be fun. The 49ers are in the first round for the first time in a long time. They have 11 picks, so
yeah,
they have a chance to really bolster their roster.
Yeah. I just have one more thing to say. If I were Brendan Rice, I would not be a wide receiver. That's just all I got to say.
Like, that's a tough one.
At least Luke McCaffrey is smart enough to be like, my brother's like one of the best running backs in recent memory. I'm just going to play wide receiver. I'm just going to do something completely different. Nobody will remember that my dad was a wide receiver. So that's cool. that's rough.
You know, it's a tough situation, but yeah, I feel bad for Brendan, especially if he goes to the 49ers. That's a lose-lose.
Yeah.
Even if he plays well.
Well, you're not your dad. Nobody's his dad. Literally no one is his father. Funny stuff. I saw he said something today about he wanted, maybe he could play for the Cowboys, so he needs that.
Oh, no.
Don't do that. So the other thing that we wanted to talk about as it relates to the draft is, and I think we were kind of touching on this, but you were saying something about before we started recording, and I've seen other people say this as well, is that there seems to be a pretty good matchup between the areas where this draft is the strongest and the relatively small amount of holes that the 49ers have on their roster. And I don't know if you wanted to say a few things about that, but I've heard a couple of people talk about it, but I think it's a good point to kind of this general sense of the season to talk about.
Well, I just think, the 49ers, as you alluded to, are such a talented team right now that they're not really needing to like have a draft just be like a generational draft, right? They just need a lot of depth at a lot of positions that lets them get players who would be drafted in like the second round and the fourth round because there's just so much talent. And I think the offensive tackles in this draft are really, really good top down. You know, the top of the draft where the 49ers can't even participate has some of the best prospects, but there's a lot of really good depth all the way down to the mid rounds where the 49ers will have a lot of their picks. I think this is a pretty solid corner draft. This is a pretty good defensive tackle draft specifically for mid round talent. And that's really what I kind of wanted to talk about is that, the 49ers have made essentially a roster out of being really good at drafting in the middle to later rounds. And that's a lot of how they, I think, approach these rounds, but this is where they have the most majority of their picks. And I just think, if there was ever a draft to maybe use 9 or 10 of those 11 picks they have, maybe bundle a couple, trade a couple, but for the most part, really restock the roster, they picked a pretty good draft to be ready to go. And I just think it bodes well for a team that probably needs an influx of youth and like just young talent at some key positions to kind of alleviate some of the stagnancy that can just come with the team being really good, but just like going on for a while, you kind of want those other guys to come in and just give a breath of fresh air. And the 49ers have a chance to really do that in this draft.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I think I don't know if they're in a position where they're going to take 10 guys and like 10 of them are going to make the team. I was listening to something the other day and they were talking about, the Rams drafted 14 players last year and all 14 of them made their roster. A couple of them ended up being like surprise, like who saw Puka Nacua coming, for example. But it's just kind of one of those things. Like, I don't know if they need that kind of level of like production out of their rookie class, but I think, like you said, they probably need to make, 9-10 draft picks and probably need to see most of those guys be able to make the team or be able to stay in the team in one way or the other. Because, there's specific places on this team where the age might start to catch up to them. You mentioned Trent Williams, other areas they're just going to have to watch out for, and they just need to be protecting themselves from letting things like age, or something like that, like get in the way of their success for next year. I think that's certainly something to pay attention to.
Yeah.
That's not just the sound of that first sip of Morning Joe. It's the sound of someone shopping for a car on Carvana from the comfort of home.
That's a good blend.
It's time to take it easy, like answering some easy questions to get pre-qualified for a car in minutes.
Talk about starting the morning right.
Just like customizing your terms so your car fits your budget.
Mm-mm-mm.
Visit Carvana.com or download the app to experience car shopping the way it should be. Convenient, comfortable. Ah.
Menards is your electrical headquarters. We carry all the tools and testers you need for any electrical job. Stack up your toolbox with Southwire electrical products today. Right now, save big money on Southwire electrical tools, testers, cable ties, wire, and cable. Shop our huge selection in-store at Menards. Ranked number one in customer satisfaction among home improvement retailers according to J.D. Power. For more information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Save big money at Menards.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
I mean, it's kind of the, you know, we could talk about the reality of the 49ers situation, which is they've been one of the best teams in the NFL, but unlike all the other ones, don't have a Super Bowl to show for it yet. This is kind of the natural life cycle of contention in the NFL. Unless you have an absolute elite quarterback, and the 49ers may have that in Brock Purdy, you're not going to be able to keep it going for a ton of time. And this is how you keep it going. It's with like a one draft or two, just a lot of good youth. I mean, I agree. I don't think they need to have all 10 guys make the roster, but I think, you know, the only way you get those like really clutch finds is by making those picks. And I can't see this year being the year where the 49ers kind of punt on the draft and are like, oh, you know, we don't really need to worry about it. I think this is a really good chance for them to almost retool in a way, despite having like a year of contention like clearly left.
Yeah.
This might be the chance for them to set up the competition, the competitive window to be a little longer.
Yeah. Yeah. Like you can't just say, well, like as soon as we have to pay Brock Purdy, like you want to be in a position where even once Purdy, if, you know, assuming that Purdy has another good year next year, and then we're having a conversation about, okay, well, how much money is he going to make moving forward? Like you still want to be able to be competitive in a way that other teams have been able to be competitive while paying their quarterback a lot of money. So we'll definitely see how that. And the way that happens is you have other guys on rookie contracts who are successful. So it's the inverse of what the 49ers have been doing this last couple of seasons, where they've had cheap quarterback play and they've been able to sign other guys, you know, who can be the top tier upper echelon of their particular positions. That will flip over the next bunch of years if Brock Purdy, you know, is indeed the guy that we hope he is. So that's what we'll see from here on out. So totally agree. I think the 49ers have to pounce on this draft and take advantage of it and set themselves up for the future for sure. All right. One other thing that we wanted to touch on for this particular episode is actually not 49ers news exactly, but it does, I think, in some way, shape or form impact what will happen throughout the 49ers offseason, and that is that Tampa Bay Buccaneers wide receiver Mike Evans, after I think just like 2 days ago, I thought I saw something where he said the rumor was he was going to try to, you know, enter free agency and see what happens, and then a couple days later it turns out he is actually just going to stay in Tampa. So 2 years, $52 million with a $35 million guarantee. That is a $26 million average annual value for the contract. Obviously, the exact numbers and how that kind of plays out, it'll be interesting to see with the cap numbers and how that plays out. But the $26 million, that average value is really the thing that a lot of players are driving towards. The guaranteed money is also very important because that's the money that they're definitely going to get. But it does have an impact on the 49ers because obviously this particular offseason, we are back to yet another contract watch. And that is with wide receiver Brandon Ayuk. And of course, that impacts the Evans deal impacts the 49ers in that this might be a number that Ayuk would look at and go, okay, well, Mike Evans got this because it's the most recent contract number. So I don't know. Akchaz, do you think this actually will have that big of an impact on Ayuk's number, or is it just such a short deal that it probably won't, and that there's probably another, like, there's probably other contracts that will be a bigger, like, impact on what Brandon Ayuk ends up getting from the 49ers, if indeed he gets something?
You know, it's tough because I think Evans and Ayuk are really different receivers insofar, and in really different stages of their career. I'd want to say that Ayuk's camp would look at this as like a lower bar now, saying this is what Evans got, so you know, now we're gonna get something above this. And you know, I'm guessing that's the way the 49ers will approach it, as this is like the point of convergence to where the money will go. It's tough though, like as an outsider of it, I feel like taking age aside, you'd probably pay Mike Evans over Brandon Ayuk. No, you know, no disrespect to Ayuk, who's
right. Yeah, yeah.
Mike Evans is like a Hall of Famer, you know, and he's so consistent too. But with age and the fact that Ayuk probably would have like 500 more yards and 5 more touchdowns if he was on a different team that threw the ball, I don't know. It's a tough one. You know, we talked about this earlier and I still wasn't able to come with a definitive answer, because I do think this is one of those contracts that both sides will use as like a cap or a floor, which maybe means that this is like, this is the money, this is where we go to, or like 26.5 AAV is like the kind of point of convergence, just a little more. But I'm more interested in the fact that a lot of teams wanted to sign Mike Evans when he was hitting the market because he's so good, and what that means for a potential trade pursuit for Ayuk. Because, you know, a lot of teams wanted to trade for Deebo Samuel, and the Niners were willing to do it, I think, for the Jets, like, top pick they would have used to take a receiver with. So, you know, if there were like 10 teams or so that were willing to pay like stupid money to get Mike Evans, what does that mean for trying to get Ayuk?
Yeah. So I'm looking at the wide receiver contracts. This is from Over the Cap. It does not include Evans' number yet, because I'm not sure that is official either. So Tyreek Hill, obviously the tip of the iceberg. He's at $30 million average annual value, with $72 million guaranteed. Devontae Adams at $28 million, $65 million and change guaranteed. Cooper Kupp right behind him at 26.7. But obviously all those guys are north of 30, and I think all three were, Adams definitely was, and Cooper Kupp might've been right in the neighborhood of 30 when he signed that contract. Brandon Ayuk's only 26, I think. I think an interesting number to pay attention to is AJ Brown, who's 27 years old. And he got a contract from the Eagles after the trade that was signed in 2020. Hold on. 4-year, $100 million extension. That was with the Titans that he initially signed. So he's still on that number from before. So that's a $25 million annual value. The guaranteed number on that was $33 million and change. I think, first of all, your first floor is, and this is, and not a disrespect to Deebo in any way, shape, or form, it's got to be higher than the 23 and change, that almost 24 that Deebo got in his average annual value. So I think that's certainly the lowest starting point. I think the AJ Brown number, that 25, is probably the starting point, right? I don't think he's going to approach Devontae Adams or Tyreek Hill money. So it's probably between 25, 26, maybe 27. If he's like, I'm going to reset the non Devontae Adams, Tyreek Hill market at this particular point, I could see that being a number that he would look at. Now, whether or not that fits with what the 49ers can afford or what they can make happen, I don't know. But they've surprised us in the past, and I just can't count anything out at this particular point. So I don't know if thoughts on that. Does that seem reasonable? I don't know. I don't know how these things work, really. But that's just my gut says it's got to be at least higher than what Debo got 2 years ago, right?
Absolutely. I agree 100%. I think if it's not, if the Niners don't offer that to Ayuk, Ayuk will demand a trade. That's, again, no, it's not even like about like Debo and Debo's like talent. It's just like the way the market works. If you like tell Ayuk, even with increasing cap and like salaries, that he should get paid less than Debo, he's not going to want to be on the 49ers. So I do think it'll be more than Debo's. I like AJ Brown's as a benchmark. I mean, I think this is a really interesting kind of situation because there are a lot of really good receivers who are extension eligible, you know, CeeDee Lamb for the Cowboys. And I do believe Justin Jefferson is kind of getting close to that point as well. Yep. So, you know, Jefferson is probably better than Ayuk. I mean, almost certainly better than Ayuk. Lamb is, has more production, although I do think that's one where you could make the case that they're a little closer than the stats would really say. But it's who's gonna take the step first, because whoever gets that first contract, I think between CeeDee and Ayuk, the other one's gonna try to beat it. Like that's gonna be that's gonna be the thing. So it's really about, you know, will the 49ers be able to work something out with Ayuk? Well, Ayuk want to take a contract knowing that Lamb is in the same situation as him.
Yeah, those are all interesting questions, for sure. And then, of course, the question is does this turn into like a DeForest Buckner type situation where they're just like, look, we've given all this money to all these players, and we like having you here, and you've been a really productive part of this team. I don't know. We'll see. Here's what I want. Here's my solution. This is me spending too much time looking at mock drafts and getting just really perturbed. I think that we should trade him to the New England Patriots for their first round pick. Go with me here. And the reason for that, and it's one reason and one reason alone, because I want to jump the Arizona Cardinals for Marvin Harrison Jr. That's it. That's really all that matters. Because I'm like, I don't know, a little terrified of having that guy in the division and him being a problem for the next like 8 to 10 years as like a receiving threat. So there's that's what I got. What do you think? Who says no?
Well, I mean the Patriots say.
Oh
no,
yeah, but... I mean 100%.
No, but actually and in the most classic, incredible podcasting Robert does, we've segued naturally into the flip side of this conversation, which is that this is a really, really, really good draft for wide receivers. And it's really good at the top end, middle end, and low end. Like, this is a draft where a team might not want to trade for Ayuk simply because they're like, I can draft, you know, Harrison, Romeo Dunze, Xavier Worthy just broke the 40-yard dash record. You know, there's a lot of talent there. Malik Nabers, just another name that they're out there. So, yeah, I do think the 49ers would think about it if Marvin Harrison Jr. or Romeo Dunze or Malik Nabers was essentially the consolation prize. I really do think they would think about it because the approach with Buckner, and this may be an unpopular opinion, I think it was the right like approach.
Mm-hmm.
It was basically looking at a few players and deciding who do we think like who has the most value if we like move them and who doesn't, and then how can we like maximize everything out of this. And one solution was paying Buckner, but I think the 49ers were trying to go for more of the sustainable, like, keep on everything flowing and then strike hot for like a particular player later situation. And, you know, Buckner was the most talented of the three players. I'm referencing Arik Armstead, Jimmy Ward, and DeForest Buckner, all of whom needed contracts, extensions at that time. And I think signing Armson Ward and getting the 13th overall pick was probably the best outcome if the 49ers had decided they weren't going to pay the combined salary that all three would have required. So in that same way, yeah, right? Like, if you can get Marvin Harrison, you get Marvin Harrison. That's probably the smart way about it. That's cost-controlled elite talent. You know, maybe Harrison won't be as good as Ayuk initially. Maybe he'll never be as good, but I highly doubt he'll be, you know, so bad that it doesn't work out. But, and I also, like, very selfishly, Brandon Ayuk is one of my favorite 49ers. And
yeah.
He went through it with Shanahan. Like, Shanahan molded him into being exactly the receiver that he wants. That's a tough ass to tell your coach, hey, this guy, the guy who basically became what you want all your receivers to look like, yeah, he's gone. I mean, I don't know. That's a tough one.
Yeah. No, I mean, I definitely agree with that sentiment. And I think he's a key cog of this offense. I think he and Brock Purdy certainly have a good connection, Super Bowl aside. I get, like, he's anybody who asked him a question about what he wanted to do with his future in the immediate aftermath of what was a very rough game for a lot of players, but also one where he felt like he had opportunities to do more, and it just didn't happen for him, right? I think it's certainly something where you got to take that with a grain of salt, but I think Shanahan clearly wanted him. Like, there's the running joke, like, he's no one has ever seen, you know, that was the COVID draft, and they had the pictures, you know, the cameras at the coaches and GM's houses because they're sitting at home, and, you know, just the fist pumping Kyle Shanahan when they traded back up and they got him in the first round. And it's just like, has Kyle Shanahan ever been so excited to draft anyone in his whole life as he was to draft Brandon Ayuk? I don't know. I think it's important that they try to figure out a way to keep him if they can. But at this point, it's got to be an agreement, right? It's got to be two. Each side is like, okay, here's what we want to do. And each side has got to be able to say, okay, well, you know, some concessions, I think, will have to be made for sure in order to make it work. Otherwise, it could be ending in not an ideal way.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. It's a tough one. I think this is really going to be the toughest of the negotiations. I think this and Debo were by far the toughest of the negotiations. And it's really just because I do think they both kind of represent the, like, question of, like, how important is the pass game to the 49ers? And how replaceable do they think they are? I think Debo was a unique case because it was coming off, like, by far his absolute best performance as a 49er that year. And, you know, like, what could you do? Mm-hmm. That was a hard, like, negotiation to have. But beyond that, I don't know. I really hope they seem to, like, get it done. If they're ready to keep a guy, they get a guy and they keep him. But I'm a little terrified. I'm not going to lie. I will not. I'm a little worried this will be the one that they kind of,
that doesn't quite work out.
Yeah.
I could certainly see that. I think part of the conversation that we were having earlier about it, how this is such a good draft in a lot of positions of need. I guess my only concern is that, again, this is a team that, as far as we can tell, the window of contention, like, for the Super Bowl is maybe closing after this next season. We don't know what's going to happen. I don't know. Maybe they have a really good draft and it ends up that the window is open for a lot longer. But this is, like, definitively at this particular point, the beginning of March 2024, as best we can see, this is, like, going to be their last great opportunity to, like, win the Super Bowl, right? And they have to grasp at that as many ways as they can. And to me, it feels like you're cutting off your nose to spite your face to just be like, well, we can't make this work, so we're going to get rid of one of our best offensive players, and then it's And then they do have to draft another guy when they're already in a weird spot offensively, because they're very thin at wide receiver in the first place. Like, it's basically Ayuk and Debo and Juwan Jennings occasionally, and then a bunch of other guys that we know nothing about, or we don't know if they can do the job or whatever. It's just like, maybe they're good, maybe they're not, we don't know, right? Like, that's concerning. And Jennings isn't even guaranteed to come back next year because he's a restricted free agent. So if that is the case, then you're left with Deebo Samuel, who's a great player, but also very prone to, like, get hurt because of the way that he plays. And it's just, and you're putting yourself in a very precarious situation in terms of, like, the roster and having the best, giving yourself the best opportunity to go out and win the thing after just missing again.
And Ayuk is the best version of, like, the type of receiver you need in the playoffs, which is why, you know, I said, Bucky Brooks, I think, said that Ayuk hasn't shown that he can beat elite one-on-one man. And that's, like, that's what makes you a true one-on-one receiver. That's probably true to some extent. I do think he can get better at, like, just dominating some of these situations. But I'm just seeing the Super Bowl. And when Debo was running routes against Trent McDuffie was running those routes for Debo. Like, mm-hmm. Debo had no separation. And that's, again, not a knock on Debo, but, like, you know, you need the guy who can win those situations. And the Chiefs defense was really good precisely because they had two corners who could basically match up against the 49ers weapons. And I do think Ayuk was more open than the game kind of gives credit for. I think Purdy didn't really see him as much. And I think he missed a couple, which was really unfortunate. But stepping aside from the Super Bowl real quick, I think this is where it is, right? It's like Ayuk is your prototypical best receiver. And as the 49ers get more comfortable, I do think you'll get more opportunities. And I agree, like, it's a really difficult ask to get this team and, like, take a step back, essentially. Because, you know, barring an absolute miracle of talent from whoever they would purportedly draft, let's say, who knows, let's say the Patriots are crazy and they're like, yeah, we'll give you the third overall pick for Brandon Ayuk in your first. Yeah, that makes sense to us. And you draft Marvin Harrison Jr. or you draft Romeo Dunze. I don't know. You draft whoever. You draft who you think the number one receiver is. That's no guarantee that he's going to become a number one in the NFL off the bat. And that's what he has to be. That's what the 49ers need. So,
yeah.
I don't know.
Well, yeah. It's definitely a... As much as you just don't want to keep throwing money at the situation, you know, you can't fill all your holes with free agents. Eventually you have to hit on these draft picks. That's what the draft picks are there for. But they also, I know for a fact based on what they've done over the last bunch of years, they also really like to reward the guys that they draft who turn out to be special players. And this is how you reward them, is by giving them more money. I think that's important to this team, like, to show that if you do what we ask you to do and you prove to be a top notch player, then we'll figure out a way to compensate you. And I think that's something they need to do. This doesn't seem to be the time to draw the line in the sand, is what I guess I would say.
I agree. I mean, I don't know why. I don't see the world where he's the example that's being set, or he's the cutoff line. If anything, I think, you know, we'll be having this conversation next year and we'll have a legitimate one about the cutoff line with Brock Purdy. But I don't know. I think, like, it's pretty clear that Ayuk is one of the, like, strong parts of your team. And I don't know. You don't want this to be 2019 all over again, where you think you're getting a sustainable outcome, but it turns out you've set your team back. And now, you know, you end up, like, paying more money, well, the same amount of money to someone who's, like, probably not as good
Yeah.
You know, and right. Javon Hargrave versus DeForest Buckner. Like, don't create a problem when it doesn't exist. And, you know, if it means that the 49ers in 2 years have to cut, like, three guys and trade someone and they go through a total reset, that's the cost of business in trying to be a really good team. And guess what? You know, with Kyle Shanahan at the helm, they're always going to have a floor of, like, talent and consistency. So I don't think you have to be too worried about that. So, you know, and everything would be easier if they just won one. Just one. Just one Super Bowl, and then, you know. One.
You're just, and then we'll want another one. Skin.
Oh, always.
But, yeah, for real. But. yeah, I think all well said there. I wanted to note one thing, actually, you just reminded me about, well, you reminded me about it a while ago, but I just saw the note that you left for me. The 49ers did announce a defensive, staff member, but it wasn't the one we were talking about earlier. They added former, Seahawks linebacker KJ Wright as their assistant linebackers coach. As I noted in our Niner Noise Slack, that means, within the next 3 years, KJ Wright will be the 49ers defensive coordinator at the rate that things are going, right? That's how that works. right? Because that's, you know, it's basically where D'Amico was like a couple of years before he got the job. And then now he's leading Houston. So KJ Wright, congratulations. You will be the 2028 head coach of some terrible team that maybe you can turn them around. I don't know. That's all I got. You know, he's still a young guy. He hasn't been retired for too terribly long, so good opportunity for him to get into the mix, and obviously has background in the Seattle defense, having played in it. So it'll be interesting to see how that goes. So Akshaz, any final thoughts on that or anything else before we wrap this one up?
You know, one of my guilty pleasures is to listen to podcasts of opposing teams sometimes, just to almost always after the Niners beat them, just because I want to understand the perspective other people have. I feel like, you know, it can get really insular. KJ Wright has a really good podcast where he talks about the Seahawks, and following that Thanksgiving game, Seahawks like fans and everyone were disappointed and mad. And, you know, he was talking a lot, and he was really effusive of the 49ers defense. And I mean, you joke, but honestly, this is the pipeline of defensive coordinators at the 49ers. I think he seems really smart. He knows how the defense works. I think he'll be a great addition to the coaching staff. And yeah, the 49ers have shown they reward good assistant coaches. They let them rise up the ranks quickly. And the sky's the limit for KJ Wright with the 49ers.
Yeah, I was only kind of joking, because it's just a pattern, right? That's how this has been going. All right. Well, that is, I think, a pretty good conversation, considering it's the off season and there's really nothing going on, right? Imagine if there were many things going on and we had lots of things to talk about. Well, we'll be, I think in the probably next week before free agency kind of kicks in, we'll reconvene and kind of talk about what the free agent market might look like from the 49ers. I think it remains to be seen whether or not there will be much, but we'll see how that goes. I imagine in the coming days, we'll start seeing conversations about restructures and maybe some in-house extensions to get to things that are easier to work on than like Brandon Ayuk. That might help them kind of clear up some cap space as they head into free agency in the new league year. But until then, we, as always, thank you for listening to this episode of the Niner Noise podcast, part of the Fansided Podcast Network. Please continue to check out ninernoise.com for all your latest 49ers news and analysis. And be sure to rate and subscribe to the podcast wherever you listen. And of course, share it with all your fellow 49er fan friends. So until next time, let's sound the horn, 49ers.
Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Synovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at synovus.com.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.